Here it is. Woods has 2 feet to win the Masters. Everyone quiets down. Tiger back behind the ball. Woods puts it.
And in! He has done it! Tiger is back! Tiger is back on top! Tiger Woods, the 2019 Masters champion. One of the great comeback stories in American sports history.
Yep, pretty amazing. If only somebody in the world would have predicted this to happen, Dusty. Because that's what I saw on social media. No one ever thought this would happen.
Really? I was on the, like, the...
Really?
I think it could. I'm not going to say it won't.
You know, I said it would.
Yeah, you said it would. But I was, you know, I'm backing myself here. Like, that's crazy for people to just say no one thinks it was ever going to happen again.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just like, let's just go ahead and give up for 100%. Like, this is never going to happen.
June of last year, posed the question to you and Chad, and I said, and then I answered it as well, and I put out there, will Tiger catch Jack Nicklaus for major championships? Jack has 18. Tiger at the time had 14. We all very quickly said no.
Yes.
Then I asked, will Tiger win another major? You and Chad said no, and you didn't even think about it very hard. You're like, nope. And I said, I didn't even remember
what I said.
You said no. Yeah. I had it on tape.
Yeah.
So I was like, I do. And I kept using the same reason over and over and over. And that is, Jack Nicklaus won a major at the age of 46. And Tiger's not 46 yet. So, you know, Mike now, our former news director,
he was years ago, probably
2010, Tiger's done. I'm like, he finished second at a tournament the other day. He's done. What is he done doing? What do you mean, done what? He said, winning tournaments. I said, I'll bet you'll win a major again. He didn't want to take that bet, but he was confident. He was done. I'm like, well, what's done? He couldn't fully explain. I'm like, done is when you quit playing golf.
Yeah.
That's when you're done. Okay, and Tiger was close. But for all these people I see on there going, no one ever thought this would happen. I thought it would. You can go back and play back the tape.
Oh, yeah. You've said it multiple times.
I've said it like every year we talk about Tiger. Even when Tiger was pulled over and he was incoherent in his car and a whole bunch of painkillers, I said at the time, I know it doesn't look good here, but this would be the most amazing story in sports if he can come back. As long as he's alive and swings a club, if he ever gets his health back, look out. Well, now he's got it, and here we are.
Yeah.
I mean, it's amazing what took place yesterday. And just to prove that I'm just not saying what I'm saying, I'll play a cut from our show before, back in August. And it's, you know, listen, I'm going to enjoy this, and here's why. Because I've been wrong a lot lately
with the
NCAA tournament picks and predictions and brackets. My wife squashed me into a bloody pulp in that contest in the Gershner household, all right? I've never been more right about something in my life since I picked the KU K-State score perfectly, 59-55 one year, which was complete luck. This one, to me, wasn't as hard to figure out, but yet apparently everybody gets paid millions of dollars to commentate. Couldn't figure it out. And I just am amazed by that. Like, if Tiger was 53, I wouldn't have said it.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But he, I mean, come on, man. Why was he losing? He was losing and playing badly because his body broke down. If he can somehow get his body put back together, and we've seen athletes do it before, then he's still got the talent in his body. Yeah. He didn't lose the talent. The talent's always there. He just needs his body to cooperate with the talent. And it finally did that, and he got his off-the-course issues handled finally.
I would say part of it was his mind broke down, for a stretch there.
Yeah, well, and of course, if you're on painkillers,
that all
ties back to your body, causing your mind to go haywire.
It's all connected, obviously.
It's all connected.
Yeah.
So Tiger wins yesterday, and it was just unbelievable theater. It was fun to watch, and it is amazing. But to me, it's not that amazing because I thought it would happen. I didn't think if it would happen. I thought it would happen. I didn't know if it'd be this year. I can't tell you it was going to be this year's Masters.
I really didn't think it would be the Masters, the next one he won. You know.
Yeah. Wait, but if you really follow Tiger, it would have. I know I said once it's got to be the U.S. Open or the Masters.
Yeah,
it's one of
the
two. But I thought the Masters would just be too perfect of a story.
Yeah, exactly.
And so I didn't necessarily buy in that he'd win the Masters. I knew he could compete because he always does at the Masters for the most part. Even when he was struggling, he'd be in contention every once in a while. But Tiger just fantastic story. Listen, if you don't like Tiger personally, that's one thing. That's fine. You don't have to like him. We know he did lots of not-so-great things off the course, although nothing criminal, never arrested, all right? He cheated on his wife. That's not something to brag about, although some people in this world do. He cheated on his wife. He had many affairs, this and that. Wasn't faithful. We know about that. Then we know he got kind of, I don't know, I'm going to say addicted to painkillers, but he got messed up on some painkillers and this medication. And that was the lowest of lows, I think, when he was found in that vehicle. And that was a few years ago, just a couple years ago. So he hit the lowest of lows. But yet, Tiger Woods, battle all the way back. People love a comeback story. Here's Tiger on winning the Masters yesterday.
Just unreal. You know, just the whole tournament has meant so much to me over the years. Coming here in 95 for the first time and, you know, to play as an amateur, winning in 97, and then come full circle 22 years later, be able to do it again.
Pretty amazing. You win a Masters 22 years apart. His first one in 97, this one in 2019. One of his biggest wins was yesterday.
To have the opportunity to come back like this, it is probably one of the biggest wins I've ever had, for sure. This has meant so much to me and my family, this tournament. To have everyone here, it's something I'll never, ever forget.
This is what I think sports is about. It's about redemption. It's about second chances. And even though I've never met Tiger Woods, and he might not be that great of a person now, although I think he's been humbled. And listen, there were so many people happy for him, a lot of golfers happy for him, and those guys were not his friends. Well, first of all, they were not even playing, a lot of them, when Tiger was at the peak of his career. But Phil Mickelson, a lot of these other guys that knew Tiger, Tiger wasn't the greatest guy to be around. He's been humbled by what happened in his life. He's a different person. And, you know, you're never too old to learn. You know, they say you can't teach an old dog new tricks. Well, if the old dog is resistant and won't be willing, then yeah, that's true. But that theory doesn't hold weight if people are willing to change. And you can teach an old dog new tricks if that dog is at least willing. And Tiger's been willing mainly because he had to be willing in order to get back to the top of the throne in golf. And he is at the top with the Masters win yesterday. It's just fantastic for sports when you see something like this. What I find ironic, and I think it is so interesting, and I think it's cool that it happened at the Masters. I thought that was the perfect place for this to happen. You can't even write a movie script better than this. You can't. But it is interesting to me that Tiger did this at Augusta, a club that didn't even let African American people play for quite some time. It was all white and wouldn't even let women play there until so many years ago.
Yeah.
I just find it interesting that Augusta benefits from a black man redeeming himself. Golf is considered a white person sport. All right, it is. It's a rich white man sport. All right, and for a man of Tiger Woods to go through what he did, and whether he's white or black or purple, whatever, to overcome everything he did, and for people to be chanting Tiger, Tiger, and forgot everything he did off the course because you knew people would buy back in. Well, play the cut. We talked about months ago that this would happen.
Oh yeah.
It was easy to figure out, but I had people telling me, oh, it's not going to be like that. I'm like, you don't know anything. I'm sorry. I'm not trying to be rude, but you don't know what you're talking about. Because history shows that when somebody does something, if they can totally redeem themselves, they will be. I mean, for crying out loud, Bruce Pearl was in trouble with the NCAA, and now he's a coach's darling and a media darling after taking Auburn to the Final Four. Kelvin Sampson wasn't allowed to coach for, what, a year or so? Because of illegal texting recruits.
Yeah, it was 2 years that he got.
And he took Houston to the Sweet 16, and now he's got a huge, major, huge, big extension with Houston. Because we suddenly forget those things. Yeah. Rick Pitino's never going to coach again after everything that happened in Louisville. Why? There's nothing directly tied to Rick Pitino. Rick Pitino hasn't admitted any guilt. They haven't found anything that he has done personally, whole situation. Rick Pitino will coach again in this country, yeah, in college.
If he wants to do it, he'll find something.
Somebody will give him a shot, and people forget about that.
Yeah.
And there will be people that will forget about Tiger's transgressions, especially if he keeps winning and winning, and he doesn't get in trouble again doing some of those same things. This might be the pinnacle of Tiger's career from the standpoint of this is redemption, he's come back, he's the top of the throne, he won the Masters, and this might be the best you're ever going to see a Tiger for the rest of his life. That might be it yesterday. Or wouldn't this be, you talk about a crazier story, and this is one I have not predicted. No, and I would guess nobody has, although I don't know for sure. But for him to win four more majors in his 40s after yesterday, which would mean five majors in his 40s, to break Jack's record of all-time 18 major championships. Now, that would be astonishing. I don't think his body can hold up long enough to do it. But I'm not going to discount it. I'm not going to say he can't. But I'm not predicting it. But this, for him to get another major championship, so many people just, I think, followed. They're like a lemming that jumped off a cliff. They just followed. They followed the herd. Some big people leading the herd said Tiger will never win again. He's broken. He's done. He's toast. Which you understand when you say he's broken. I mean, he even says, I mean, I couldn't even get out of bed. I could barely sleep. My back was messed up. I didn't think I'd play again. Tiger might have surprised himself with what he's been able to accomplish. But there's so many people that just don't think for themselves. They just automatically, well, this is what the majority is saying, so I'm going to go with the majority. Well, yeah, but those guys must know what they're talking about. Well, Tiger, yeah, Tiger's done. Whether you know golf or not. And, you know, every once in a while, it's okay to go against the stream a little bit and say, wait a minute, let me think about this for myself. He's still not an old geezer. He still has talent in his body. He didn't forget how to swing a club. His body broke down. If Jack Nicklaus can win a Masters at the age of 46, why can't Tiger Woods or Phil Mickelson or anybody in their 40s, for that matter, that has talent, as long as they're healthy, why can't they? And with the technology we have today in society to fix people, I'll give you an example. We're talking about backs. Tiger Woods' back. Of course, he had horrible knee problems, too, and tore up his knee. One of his last majors with a ripped-up knee, torn ligaments and everything. So he had the knee, he had the back, and then, of course, the mental part with everything that he caused himself off the course. My dad had back surgery when I was in, I think I was probably 11 or 12 years old. He was in the hospital for a week. He had another back surgery 15 years later. You know how long he was in the hospital?
Probably a day.
He was in and out same day.
Yeah, yeah.
So you see how quickly technology and medical technology can change. So that was another reason why I couldn't give up on Tiger personally, because I'm like, I know there's stuff out there that can make you better or can help speed it along. And you know Tiger has access to that stuff. He has all the money in the world. Tiger, for all the transgressions and problems he has off the course, is he broke?
No.
No. He's not broke. He's not stupid. He just fell into some tough times. He probably battled depression. And when you see somebody that ascends to the top of a mountain, it's easier to get there than it is to stay there. And everybody's looking to chop you down and drop you off that mountain or that cliff. They want to knock you down. Everybody's shooting and gunning for you. And then to fall off that mountain, roll all the way to the bottom, or even, you know, below the bottom, as Tiger basically did, and to come back from, I guess you could call it the golf dead, because that's what people called his career, dead. Yeah. Colin Cowherd said he's a former golfer. He's been saying former golfer for 6 years. Colin Cowherd, sorry, what the heck are you talking about? And that's a guy who gets paid millions of dollars to talk sports. And why would he say something like that? Probably just to get people riled up.
Yeah.
Because did he really believe that? Because if he did, then he's not that smart. Because Tiger, even though he hasn't been at top of his game, he's still been in contention. PGA Championship, he finished second. That was back this past fall or spring or summer, excuse me.
Summer.
So it's not like if he can almost win the PGA then, why can't he win a major this year? That's why I still can't believe people weren't thinking Tiger could win the Masters. I'm astonished
after
by that.
After that happened, I don't think I would have said absolutely no.
No, but people had him. His odds were lower than normal.
Yeah.
It's like, I understand if he didn't do anything last year on the tour. I get that.
Yeah.
Like he had, you know, years prior to that. So it's interesting. Now, I will say, I joked about this early on the show. I could have just slept in today. I could have just played the show we had before. This was in August. This was in August. This is talking about Tiger and whether or not Tiger's going to another major. Listen, this is not me live. This is what this is why people listen to Sports Ticket, to get accurate predictions. I'm kidding. Because, folks,
once every 3 years,
you know as well as I know, and if you're listening right now and going, well, Wade, you're just bragging. This is getting ridiculous. I'm having fun with this. And if you don't understand I'm having fun with this, then you really need to broaden your horizons and open up your mind a little bit, okay? I mess up all the time. Talk to my wife. Have a conversation with her. I screw up all the time. I say things that are right sometimes, but more often than not, wrong. Okay? I look at my NCAA tournament bracket. You know I was wrong a lot, okay? Dusty didn't do great either.
No.
But better than me. I barely, I barely beat my five-year-old in NCAA tournament bracket challenge, okay? So I'm not the brightest bulb in the bunch. But when I have a chance to say that we knew what we were talking about on this show, and we do from time to time know what we're talking about, and that's why maybe that's helpful for you to listen to our show, and you may disagree with some of the things we say, which is what makes
The point of it.
That's the point of talk radio, whether it's Rush Limbaugh, whether it's Colin Cowherd, whether it's Jim Rome, whether it's Dusty and me here in North Central Kansas. If you agreed with everything we said, this would be a boring show.
Yeah.
It would be really boring. If Dusty and I agreed on everything, it'd be really, yeah, well, geez, Wade and Dusty ever going to disagree? Because that would make for more interesting radio. So this was back in August when we talked about Tiger Woods. Listen to this. But I have said on the show many times before that I have not given up on Tiger Woods to win a major. I've said, and many, all of us have said, we took a poll 2 months ago about Tiger Woods here at the radio station. And we said, is he going to break Jack Nicklaus's major record of 18? We all said no. Said, will Tiger win another major? And Dusty and Chad said no. I said yes. I think he's going to win one more. And I'm guessing people laughed at me when I did that. And I am in a very small, small minority of Tiger Woods fans thinking, and I'm not really a Tiger Woods, I am a Tiger Woods fan because I respect what he does and the way he plays. But I've said all along, and we've talked about it before on the show, that the best thing that could ever happen to golf and to sports would be for Tiger Woods to make an amazing comeback and win a major. And it's funny because we had talked about this before on the show, I think a few years ago, when Tiger just, I mean, he wasn't even playing and this and that. And we were talking about how people don't like Tiger. And I remember we had this discussion or argument on the show. I was like, I'm going to tell you something. When Tiger gets good again, if he gets good again, people will eat it up. People love a comeback story in this country. Even if he created the problems himself, people eat this stuff up, including me. And all these people, all the naysayers, over and over kept saying, Tiger's done. Mike Schrant and I had this argument when he used to work here. He said he'd never win a tournament. He said he's done. I said, what do you mean he's done? He's done. I go, what do you mean he's done? He's still playing. He can win tournaments. He's done. I'm like, what does that mean? He couldn't explain it. I was like, as long as Tiger Woods is still picking up a golf club, he's not done. And I have used this example over and over and over and over. The time I will write Tiger Woods off from winning another major is when he turns 47. Why would I pick the age of 47? Because the Golden Bear, the person that has the most majors won in the history of golf, the number that Tiger has been chasing for a decade, and now I think he's not really chasing that number, Jack Nicklaus has won 18 majors. That's more than anybody's ever played in golf. Tiger's won 14. Tiger was on pace to blow that number away. Then the issues off the course. We know all about that. And then his issues with his health and his back and everything else and his knee. So Jack Nicklaus, how old was Jack Nicklaus when he won his final major, Dusty?
46, if I remember.
46.
Right.
46. Nobody expected him to win the Masters in 1986 at the age of 46. No one. No one. I don't even know if Jack Nicklaus thought he was going to win it. He did. If Jack Nicklaus can win a major at the age of 46, why the bleep can't Tiger Woods? And that has been what I have been going by ever since Tiger had his downfall. Unless he quits the game, then he's done.
Well, sure.
Okay,
sure.
But he's never quit the game officially or retired from the sport. I've said all along, if he can get his health together, he's got until 46, 47 years of age to win a major. And maybe that's unfair. Maybe I should put the number at 50. Well, thanks for tuning in, everyone. I think that should wrap up the show here today. I mean, it is crazy. It is crazy. I need to be more right about my lottery number picks than I need to be about this. I'll have to admit, this is the wrong place to be right because I'm not really benefiting from it.
You're never right when you're putting anything on the line, you know?
Yeah, right, exactly. Like, hey, I bet $1,500 on Kansas and Kansas State to make it to the Final Four. Well, that didn't work out very well. Okay. But Texas Tech did. No, I didn't bet that, but a guy did on Texas Tech, if you don't know. But you know, right there, it's interesting few things that we said during the show there. It was, one, people are going to eat this up. It'll be insane. Well, boom, what do we have yesterday?
Oh.
It was insanity.
Yeah.
It was insanity. I mean, I saw people...
All my Twitter was about Tiger.
It was all about Tiger.
That's it.
There's only one guy in sports that can move the needle like that. Tiger. There's nobody in sports. LeBron doesn't move the needle like Tiger. There are two guys in sports that I've seen that can move the needle like that. Michael Jordan and Tiger. That's it.
Yeah.
And Tiger's done it now, winning the Masters at the age of 21. Now he wins the Masters at the age of 43. It is pretty amazing what he's been able to accomplish. And he's still not done. Shrant, are you listening out there? He's still not done here in 2019. Some nuggets about Tiger's championships, and then we will move on to local sports, and we'll talk Royals and the spring football and NBA and NHL. Tiger's 15th major championship, as we know, brings him within three of Jack Nicklaus's record of 18. He now has five green jackets. He's won the Masters five times, second to Nicklaus, who's won it six times. Tiger and Jack are the only players in the history of golf to win professional majors 20-plus years apart. They're also the only players in history to win the Masters in three different decades. Tiger is the oldest Masters winner since Jack's last Masters in 1986 when Nicklaus was 46, as we established. The 14 years between Masters wins is the longest gap between wins in tournament history. This is the first time since 2005 that the Masters champion was outside the top 10 after round one. Woods rallied from a 74 to win his fourth green jacket 14 years ago. It's just interesting the numbers here. The 2019 Masters is Tiger's first major win when trailing after 54 holes. Remember that? That was a knock on Tiger. Well, he's not leading going into Sunday, so he can't win. He changed that yesterday.
Yeah.
Tiger remains undefeated at majors when 11 and under or better through 54 holes through three rounds of golf. And what was also interesting was he was denied his 15th major championship at last year's Open by Francisco Molinari. Then again in the PGA Championship, he lost to Brooks Koepka, finished second. Well, those are guys he had to beat down the stretch to win the Masters yesterday. And was he great? Listen, Tiger was smarter than everybody in the field yesterday. If you know anything about golf and you watched the tournament yesterday, Tiger, he didn't even hide the secret. It wasn't even a secret. Tiger's plan going into the tournament's final round yesterday was simple. Be patient. Let other guys crumble under the pressure and just be steady Eddie all the way through. And what do you know? Hole 12. What were there, four double bogeys in the top 10? Everybody fell apart on 12.
Molinari had not a real good back nine.
No, and then he fell apart. And then he hit another one. He was messed up. Was it 15, I think, he messed up, took another double. He was out. You know, Koepka, even on the last putt to make it somewhat interesting, had he made that last putt, Koepka, Tiger would have had to have parred.
Yeah.
And that could have been interesting going to a playoff. And Koepka kind of smiled when asked about that putt, what was going through his head. And Koepka's Mr. Steele. I mean, he's pretty confident. He's very he concentrates. He's very focused. And he, to me, looked like he pulled that putt for that birdie on 18. And then Dustin Johnson, who had a great run yesterday, said afterwards in the Butler cabin, he said, you know, I played good, but it doesn't look like it's going to be good enough. And they said, what was it like out there? And he said, well, you know, it's very clear to know when the roar is for me and when it's for Tiger.
Oh, yeah.
When Tiger does something at any major, it doesn't have to be Masters, but even more so at the Masters, everybody playing ahead of him or behind him on the course and everybody that's ahead on the leaderboard or right behind or tied with Tiger feel the immediate pressure, and they don't even have to have the score posted on the scoreboard.
Yeah,
they know Tiger's done something. And there is only one golfer in the history of golf that has created that type of atmosphere, that type of reaction. When you can say a cheer is called a Tiger roar, what other golfer has had a roar named after him?
There's no bear roar.
No bear roar. You know,
that'd be
the
only one that you could even think of, really.
It's insane. It's insane. And then what also made it interesting was these younger guys competing against him were guys grew up that started playing because of Tiger or watched Tiger when he was in his early 20s. and grew up watching him. And it's funny because these younger guys, I think, thought Tiger's a bit of a competitor, but he's not a serious contender. I get that feeling for some of these young whippersnapper, great young golfers that, yeah, Tiger's a nice story, but he's probably not going to win it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And they kept saying, yeah, that'd be great if Tiger won, da-da-da-da. And yeah, well, Tiger was great in the day. They never experienced that intimidation factor on Sunday with Tiger. And there was a little bit of that yesterday because of the crowd, I think. And, yeah, Tiger didn't drive the ball as far as he once did. And the technology now, everybody can drive the ball pretty much, you know, 350 yards or further. And Tiger's not the distance leader off the tee like he was earlier in his career. But Tiger was just smarter than everybody on the course yesterday. He was more, and he had to pull off the shots. He had to have the talent and the health. But he was smart. He didn't take dumb chances, you know? Even on the last hole, he took a 3-wood and basically laid up on a par 4 because he wasn't going, or par 5 I think it was, but he wasn't going to make a mistake with his driver. And he knew he had a 1-stroke lead or 2-stroke lead going into that hole. And then he played conservative on the second shot. I think he did. Some people say that the tree was a factor, and it might have been. And then he just made a safe little chip up there, and he two-putted for the victory. That's smart golf.
That's
something that
anything.
Phil Mickelson, if he would do more often, would have more majors.
Yeah.
Tiger was just smarter than everybody, plus he had the talent and the knowledge and the experience to win on that course, which has had to adapt to Tiger back in the 90s and early 2000s. They've made the course longer. They've changed the angles. They put in a second cut. I mean, they made that course tougher because of Tiger.
Yeah.
You know, guys that can change the way tournaments are set up or they change the rules of a sport are transcendent players.
Yeah.
Wilt Chamberlain, the basketball rules were changed because of Wilt Chamberlain. And when you think about it, some of the, not necessarily the golf rules, but the layouts started to change because Tiger was just tearing up the shorter courses.
Yeah. To not play it the way Tiger did yesterday would be like a team's up by 3 in a basketball game with 20 on the shot clock, 25 in the game, and a guy pulls up and takes a shot.
Exactly.
You know, you play the percentages of how you're going to go ahead and how am I going to get this win?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to get this win by doing the right things, not taking risks, and doing things I know I can do. I have a 2-stroke lead. I got a stroke to play with here that if I bogey here, I'm not going to lose this tournament.
Right.
So you don't go for anything more than what you need when you're trying to wrap up a championship.
Right.
And, yeah, you put it perfect. I was pretty confident that he was going to win the thing after the tee shot on 16. I was like, over.
When he stuck that thing near the pin.
Before he even hit the putt, yeah. I was like, this tournament is over.
I was like, he makes the putt, it's over.
Yeah. You know? And I had no doubt the way he was playing at that point that he was going to make the putt.
He was dialed in.
Yeah.
He was dialed in. He looked like the Tiger of old.
We're going to be talking about Tiger tomorrow. Yeah.
He didn't make a mistake. He didn't pull a chip or anything. I mean, he just was... It was fun to watch.
Yeah.
And
I actually watched the entire back nine, and I don't watch golf.
You're not a golf
guy. And so I was playing around with my cousin. I was telling him, why would I watch this? I could get a 5-minute recap and know everything I need to know about this tournament. He's like, not this tournament. I was just messing around with him. Mm-hmm. And I was like, actually, dude, I watched the entire back nine. I was just joking around with you.
Because it was history.
Yeah.
And I hate to say the word never because I'm very hesitant to use the word never because when you say never, that's so definite. I don't believe we'll ever see anything like that in golf ever again. What we saw yesterday.
No.
A guy that went 11 years between majors, all the things he went through. I mean, it wasn't just his wife divorcing him and, you know, taking a club and trying to break out the windows of his car. I mean, there's much more to this.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the knee injury, the back injuries, the health, the mental health, being found in a car incoherent and took some painkillers, this and that. I mean, there's so much more to this story. And then for him to hug his mom, who was there 22 years ago when he won his first Masters, and for him to now his kids be growing up, his son Charlie hadn't even seen his last major victory,
yeah,
which was back in 2008. But to go 11 years and do what he did against guys that can hit the ball a mile and a half and some really, I mean, this is the best players in the world, and he beat all of them.
Yeah.
At the age of 43 is very impressive. I guess the next question is, can he continue this? You look at the courses he's get. Pebble Beach is where the U.S. Open is. That's where he had his biggest victory ever by margin.
Uh-huh.
You know, there's another course, I think, I don't know if it's the British Open, but there's another course, maybe it's the PGA, where it's a course he's won at before. Is this Bethpage maybe for the U.S. Open? I can't remember. But anyway.
Yeah, is that in New York?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. The U.S. Open's in New York.
Yeah,
Riley told me that this weekend.
He won that before, and he won Pebble Beach. And yeah, so you get the PGA Championship, get the U.S. Open, he can definitely win that. And then last year at the majors, he was in contention in three of the four, but yet somehow people didn't see this coming.
After last year, what he did during the majors, I definitely changed my tune of when I would have said, no, he's not going to win one. Right. I mean, if you watch that, then you just like, you can't just sit here and say, no, it's not going to happen.
Right, right. Well, after the PGA Championship, when he finished second, that's when I went back. It was August 13th of 2018. We asked the question. Well, it was 2 months before that we asked the question.
Yeah, it was before that.
It was in June. So it had been before the PGA Championship. And you know, I was sitting on an island, man. Everybody said no.
Say he can't. It's never ever possible.
We asked, would he?
I just, you know, we predict no, and I predict a lot. We predict a lot of things. Like you said, you predict no on a lot of stuff.
Right.
Maybe it's going to happen.
Right.
I predict that this is going to happen, and it's not going to happen.
Right.
You know.
Yeah. But
sometimes you nail it.
That's right. So nailed this one, and we'll see if Tiger can then make us all look stupid and win 19 majors, because I will say on record right here, I didn't think he'd get to 19.
My prediction will be no again.
I would still be no on that, because I think the body will break down at some point. Of course, it might be, he might get to 17, and then that's when it breaks down. But nobody thought, pretty much nobody thought that he could win another, or that he would win another. And he did yesterday. Pretty amazing stuff.
Yes.
And if you missed it yesterday, you missed out on sports history, no question. Maybe the greatest comeback in sports history. Maybe. I'm not saying it is, because I'd have to really think about all the great comebacks in sports history. But this is one. You know, you think about this. Maybe this is the year of the comeback. Virginia lost to a 16 seed in the first round last year. This year wins the national championship and catches a few breaks, creates their own luck. And then Tiger with the ultimate comeback. I mean, what's the next comeback? What we got? Baseball. What would be an amazing, I guess, a team that was down 20 games in the standings comes back and wins a division or something? What kind of comeback do we have in baseball?
Teams are on the brink or something that almost won.
George Brett's going to come back for the Royals and lead them to the World Series. Now that would be the greatest comeback in sports. All right, local sports, Dusty.
Yeah, short schedule today. There wasn't much over the weekend as far as that's concerned, but high school track today for St. John's and Smith Center. They're at the Hill City Invitational at 3 o'clock this afternoon. And then Beloit Smith Center golf teams are at Republic County at 11 o'clock this morning is when they tee off there. And then Osborne Golf is at Plainville this afternoon, and that starts at 3 o'clock. So, again, always for the latest in local sports schedules, scores, news, it's ntksports.com is where you want to go.
All right. If you're a Tiger fan and you like the Royals, it was a good weekend for you. The Royals.
Maybe that's your comeback.
Well, there you go.
Three straight wins after a 10-game losing streak.
Apparently, Jason and I brought them luck after we were there, right? I thought we should have won the game. We were there, obviously. But they get swept in four by the Mariners. They're 2-10, and now they sweep the Indians. Who would have predicted that they'd sweep the Indians? I would say, I know I didn't.
No.
And I know you didn't.
Nobody did. Get lucky if they win a game.
I was thinking, if they can win one or two, it'd be great. But they ain't going to win all three. The Royals are now 5-10. And the Twins lead a division at 8-4. The Royals back in action. And it was an exciting win yesterday, even though the bullpen still isn't great. Even Lovelady, the young guy, struggled yesterday. Gave up three runs in a third of an inning. Royals blew the lead multiple times. But luckily at home, you get the final at bat.
The outfield is in. And Dozier hits a line drive base hit. A walk, a stolen base, an error. Single and a sweep.
A sweep after being swept by the Mariners in four. The Royals sweep the Indians in three. Gore came in, pinch ran, stole second, wild throw, went to third, comes in on the single by Dozier. He's been hitting the ball pretty well here the last week or so. Ned Yost says still a lot of work to be done in closing games.
We're a better team than a 10-game losing streak showed. Right? We still have some issues. We still need to get on the attack for the most part. Some of our young pitchers need to understand how good they are when they step on the mound and get on the attack. Junis came in, did a phenomenal job, you know, get us through six and the third and was perfect, and then we can't get through the inning without giving up three runs. That's got to stop, and our young guys are good enough to make it stop. So but we're a lot better than a 10-game losing streak, and I think that's a really good team over there. You know, they're an extremely good team, but I think we're a good team too.
Royals now 5-10, winners of three in a row. They go on the road, take on the White Sox. Irvin Santana, former Royal, back in the big leagues after a year hiatus, will pitch against KC. Heath Fillmyer will be on the hill for the Royals and try to win their fourth in a row. And if you're wondering early on the standings, Seattle has the best record at 13-5, but Houston now is 11-5. Tampa Bay is 12-4, so technically Tampa Bay's got the best winning percentage.
So the Mariners just got swept after they swept the Royals,
too,
then.
They did.
They were 13-2 after
that. That's right. They're 13-5. Every team has those losing streaks.
Yeah.
And then in the National League, San Diego has the best record, 11-6. The worst record in baseball, Colorado Rockies, Miami Marlins are 4-12. So the Royals no longer have the worst record in baseball. And how about the Yankees? They're 6-9, and the Red Sox are 6-10. This is hard to believe. We've only played through, 3 weeks of the baseball season? Tampa Bay Rays have a 5.5 game lead in their division. The Yankees are in second at 6-9. Baltimore, Boston 6-10. Toronto 5-11. That is crazy to have that big a lead this early. In comparison, the next biggest lead in any division is 2 games, which is what you'd expect.
Yeah.
Early in the year,
yeah,
when you only play 16 or 17.
Yeah.
Pretty wild stuff. But if the Royals, I've kind of felt all along, if the Royals could kind of flip a few of those veterans in the bullpen and get some younger guys, I would rather see that, and maybe they develop into something. And it'll be interesting to see how the Royals handle Danny Duffy. If he's going to be put in the pen right away, or if they want him back in the rotation. It's not like they have a great fifth starter right now. But when you look at the Royals, I mean, hey, they got some young guys along with some veterans. Alex Gordon's hitting the cover off the ball now. Gordon's having a great start to the year, which is terrific to see.
Yeah.
There you go. There's another comeback.
Yeah.
If Gordon can play like this all year long, holy shnikes.
See how much it helps in the actual standings in the end of the year, but for a personal comeback, that would definitely be it.
That would be it, no question. All right, spring football recaps before we get to the NBA NHL playoffs. Kansas will start with theirs. Running backs rule the night. The offense won 45-7 at KU spring game. First one under head coach Les Miles, and about 5,000 people attended. It was late night under the lights. They actually had a spring full game. And they kept stats. Dom Williams, not Puka, who's still not on the team. He's still off the team because of the issues he has off the field. Maybe be back this fall. I know KU's hoping that. But Dom Williams, he ran for 97 yards, a couple of touchdowns. And they had McVitie that started quarterback. They also had Tony Lachlan, a freshman. He played as well. And so it sounded like people that went to the game had fun. It was a good event. And there is excitement. No question, there's some buzz around the KU football program. First time they've had buzz around their football program since, I don't know, 2008 when they won the Orange Bowl.
Whenever Mangino got canned, the first 5-0 start of that season.
They started 5-0, ranked top 15, lost 7-0, and then Mangino suddenly became a big bully overnight.
But yeah, that was the last time there was this, a lot of buzz around the football program.
Yep, that's right. That had been 10 years
ago. Was the 5-0 start.
Maybe that's the comeback story we're looking for again later this year. KU, Les Miles, KU goes the Orange Bowl first year. If Tiger can win a Masters at the age of 43 and Alex Gordon can hit the cover off the ball at the age of 35, why not?
Yeah.
Come on, man. Let's dream a little.
Let's do it.
All right. So you were at the K-State spring game. I'll just kind of hand it off to you. What were your impressions?
K-State
spring
was definitely not 5,000 people there.
I saw the picture.
There was not a lot of people there. That's a product of what they did. It was just a scrimmage, and they didn't keep stats or anything like that. A 30-minute scrimmage at the end. There were some plays that were made, and it was fun to watch. You don't see anything. Sammy Wheeler, I think, was the guy that stood out because he had a one-handed catch. They actually ruled it out of bounds on a one-handed catch in the end zone at the end of the scrimmage. And he's a converted quarterback that's now a tight end, and he's got some size. And I think that everybody was talking about him. Had that catch not happened,
I don't know
what anybody would have talked about after the whole thing was over, because it was just like it was standard stuff. There wasn't a lot of contact, obviously, but they went out and did their things. I think for me it was more exciting to be able to talk to the kids afterwards and get their thoughts about the new staff. And it's insane how much more upbeat those guys are. Mm-hmm. It's just insane. And every single one of them's like, we got a coaching staff that cares about us, that wants us to improve, and they'll do anything for us. We can go meet them whenever we want and go in their office, watch film and all this and that. And that's what stood out to me was the joy that these kids had compared to, some of the times when you talked to them last year, you knew that it just wasn't, they weren't having fun anymore. And obviously Skylar Thompson at the top of that list is a guy that is excited that he's not looking over his shoulder anymore. He doesn't have Delton there, so he's the guy.
It's just a confidence thing. It feels good to have a feeling that, you know, my coaches and my teammates believe in me and trust me. And it just gives me a lot of confidence. Gives me a lot of confidence to go make plays and not second-guess myself, never looking over my shoulder. It's elevated our offense, you know, just from the continuity part of it so much. So I'm really thankful for that, and, you know, it's a blessing. You know, I'm really fortunate to be in this position with this Coach Kleiman and his new staff. I'm loving it, and I'm loving the game. So this is what it's all about.
And Coach Kleiman had some thoughts on Skylar Thompson as well.
Just his awareness of our offense, his constant ability to learn more every day about what we're doing offensively. He and Coach Klein and Coach Mess meet an awful lot. They do a great job of continuing to give him more and more information, and he's able to retain. That's the thing I was so impressed with Skyler, is the amount of information he was able to retain in a 15-day practice, and the fact that we threw everything in the playbook at him. And some things probably emphasize more than others, but when we come back for the fall, it will all be recall for him. And I know the kind of work ethic he has. He'll work on this stuff all through the spring, all through the summer, so that he'll be really refined when we come to August.
Well, we've talked about it for a while. Riley's talked about it for a while. We have him on every Tuesday. We'll have him on tomorrow of GoPowerCat.com to talk K-State in the spring showcase. And we've all been in agreement that, you know, Kansas State kept jerking back and forth between quarterbacks, although there have been years Bill Snyder's been successful rotating quarterbacks, but eventually somebody kind of, you know, the cream rises to the top. And last year it just wasn't allowed, whether that was Skyler's fault, Alex's fault, or the coaching staff's fault, maybe a combination of all of it, but some of the way it was handled wasn't best. And there's no question that guys, if they know they don't have somebody looking over their shoulder, they relax a little bit. Just think about it in your own work.
Yeah.
You know, if Dusty's sitting here at the board and I'm looking over his shoulder every single day, critiquing everything he does, and when he makes a mistake, I said, Dusty, get out of here. Let me handle it.
Yeah.
You know, what's that going to do for Dusty's self-esteem and confidence? And
not good.
Are you going to like to work for me?
Yeah.
In
no,
the station?
Not at all.
No. What do you think Skylar Thompson was going through last year?
Well, and I've said the same thing about Jake Waters. You know, once Daniel Sams was gone, man, he became such a better player.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, there's all kinds of examples that I've seen just watching K-State sports. Shane Southwell, when Frank Martin was gone, he just turned into a different kid and a different player. And that's, you know, that's that whole, I'm not going to get pulled out of the game if I do something wrong. I'm not going to get pulled out of my job if I do something wrong. I can make a mistake and still be okay.
It's okay to have competition. But there's a difference between competition and then jerking a guy back and forth to where you don't have it. And I said all along, I still truly believe this, that when a team goes into a football camp talking about it's a wide-open competition, or we've got two quarterbacks battling for number one spot, or same thing if it's running back, linebacker, that tells me you don't have one really good one.
Yeah.
You have two decent ones. You don't have one really good one. Now, hey, Skyler's the guy. Skyler's the guy. Now, K-State, big loss defensively. Coach Kleiman had a chance to talk about that.
The reason I kept this up is because it's so weird to hear a K-State coach say this.
Talk about injuries?
The way he said it, because he'll say everything you need to know in this cut.
All right, here we go. This is Justin Hughes out for the season with a serious injury. Coach Kleiman talks about it.
Yeah, he tore his ACL last week. Sick for the kid. Love him. He knows how I feel about him. In my opinion, in a short time around him, heart and soul of our football team. Kids love him. Coaches love him. He'll be back, and he's got an opportunity to get a medical hardship, and he's going to do that because he loves the game of football. And so the challenge for Justin is to be a great leader, to be that captain like he is from the sideline next year. And he'll be challenged by it, but I think he'll grow from it. I know he'll be back stronger and better than ever, but he'll miss next year.
But you are confident he'll be back in 2020?
Oh, I'm really confident he's going to be back in 2020.
Okay, and so now let's play the, okay, if Coach Snyder was the head coach at K-State, what about Justin Hughes' situation? No comment. I mean, you just did that.
As he got later, he'd be like, well, there's an issue there, but we'll work at it, and we hope to see him on the field later.
Yeah, but it wouldn't be much.
Yeah, he would not say.
No. Hey, tore his ACL.
Tore his ACL, we're going to miss him this year.
Yeah, right.
Not
heart and soul of our team, and it's, feel bad, I love him. I'm not saying Bill Snyder didn't love his players. Not saying that at all.
No.
It's just that Bill went about it a different way, and you can't argue with the way Bill went about it because he was an extremely successful football coach, and I still think it is very odd. Or not odd. Well, yeah, it's odd. although I'm not surprised by it, and I know you aren't either.
No.
That Bill Snyder still hasn't made any public comments, and he's not done anything to address K-State Nation after he was, you know, he decided to step away, which tells you that if he did it on his own volition, he'd be like, okay, I'm riding into the sunset.
Yeah.
And he wanted to be back. And I'm guessing he's not a big fan of what's taking place at K-State right now because it's a complete 180. It's completely, it's almost...
All the access and
if he takes
like
it personally, if he takes it personally, like some people do, he could have the thinking that this is all being thrown in my face because everybody talks about how everybody loves each other, the kids play harder, the kids more access for the media, and it's all opposite of what I did. Like, my way didn't work. I could see Bill Snyder being offended by this quite a bit.
Oh, yeah.
And I wouldn't blame him.
No, and I wouldn't either. I mean, it's a different thing, but you always, you know, something you felt worked the way you did it should have been the way it's always done.
Right.
And, you know, there's things that I do that maybe some other person than in our profession does different. And you're just like, I don't like the way they do that. But you know what? It's not it's kind of offensive sometimes when you see it, but you just got to roll with the punches. But yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if right now I'm guessing he's trying to stay away from it as much as he can from that aspect of it, the access part and hearing what the players are saying about him and this new staff and things like that. But yeah, it would definitely grind my gears if I was Bill Snyder hearing all that.
When I think about all of that is I just go back to the thing I was taught when I was younger, although I don't always follow it and I should. If you have nothing good to say, don't say anything at all. And I think that might be what Bill Snyder's doing right now.
Oh, I definitely
think, if I got nothing good to say, I'm just going to not be
around.
Bill
Snyder's still about protecting his image, and he doesn't want to go out there and say the wrong things.
Look like the old curmudgeon that's, you know, still mad at everybody. Yeah, I hear you. All right, it's funny, we were talking about there were a lot of people at the K-State Spring Showcase. KU didn't have a spring game last year, remember? They were short players. It kind of makes me think about training camp with the Chiefs. So many people are like, oh, training camp Chiefs is so awesome. I'm like, no, it's not. Like, I've been multiple times. Like, training camp's a neat first-time experience. It's something different, but it's not exciting.
That's not something – I've been once, and it's not something I strive to go back to.
No, it's not exciting
if it was in some other place than St. Joe, I might, but
– I mean, what you're seeing there isn't a lot different than what you see at a high school football practice. It's just that you got more guys, bigger guys. Better athletes. Yep.
You're talking about elite football players instead of high school kids.
Yeah.
But,
Tyreek Hill makes
the rest of it's just like whatever.
Tyreek Hill makes a big, you know, catch one-handed from Patrick Mahomes. Okay, you talk about it, but it was a 7-on-7 drill. I mean, the fun part is the games and stuff for the kids you can watch, but it's not super exciting to watch. And then you hope to get autographs, which you don't really, you know, that's a whole different story for another day. But you can kind of get autographs if you do it right.
Yeah.
Speaking of Tyreek Hill and the Chiefs, he will be in attendance at the start of the Chiefs' offseason workout program today, per source. Police have been investigating two incidents of suspected child abuse at Hill's home last month. There is nothing's been determined on all of that. So the Chiefs apparently saying, hey, you know, you're still part of the team. There's still an investigation going. So he is at the offseason workout program today. So that's good news if you're a Chiefs fan that he's there. It doesn't mean that he's not going to be in trouble or be a part of this team next year, depending on what they find out in this investigation. So stay tuned on the Tyreek Hill situation. The NBA playoffs over the weekend, a lot of upsets early on in the first game of these best of seven. Now, this is the great thing about the NBA and NHL playoffs. You lose one game, your season isn't over.
Yes.
Whereas in college basketball, you can clearly be the better team, and you lose, and you're done. So Boston up 1-0 on the Pacers. Oklahoma City down 1-0 to Portland. Detroit without Blake Griffin. The Bucks rolled them 121-86. Rockets win big last night over the Jazz 122-90. So 1-0 series leads for those winners. Game 2, Brooklyn Nets against Philadelphia. That was one of the upsets. Nets beat the Sixers. Joel Embiid not healthy, and the Sixers have some issues. The fans were booing them in game 1 of their series because Philadelphia fans know how to boo better than anybody in the world. They booed Santa Claus, ladies and gentlemen, back in the day. At a football game, they booed Santa Claus.
Some of them Philly players need a little thicker skin,
too. Like Ben Simmons, I would agree with you. If you're not with us, you're not on our side. Come on,
man. If you're booing now, you better be booing when we're good, too. I'm like, what? That doesn't even make sense, man.
Okay, Ben, go back to college. So, Sixers down 1-0 against the Nets. Nets are the sixth seed. The Warriors up 1-0 of the Clippers. Durant gets tossed along with Patrick Beverly in that game. I watched the last half of that fourth quarter. And Jeff Van Gundy, I'm going to say it. He is one of the best announcers and analysts in all of sports. And Jeff Van Gundy is, what I love about him is he's usually fairly blunt and to the point.
Yeah.
And that's one of the reasons why I like Barkley to a point in regards that he's blunt. Now, sometimes he says some crazy stuff, but he's not afraid to say it, and yeah. I love that in today's society. We're all worried about this politically correct society, and we're so scared of saying something that offends somebody with thin skin. But the whole thing with these technical fouls, Durant's got a ton of them this year. We know Westbrook had 16 and suspended for a game. Draymond Green can't go a play without arguing with the official. And I've said it for quite some time, you've said it as well, that officials got to take charge. And that is, tee them up early and shut them up. Because if they're going to complain and bellyache, it used to be that in high school and college that you complained to officials, you usually got a tee fairly quickly. You didn't complain a lot.
Yeah.
But now you're seeing it at the high school level. There's officials at the high school level don't have the kahunas to tee up kids anymore. Or they rarely do. It has to be something really severe. Same thing with coaches. Coaches go too far even at the high school level. And the NBA is just a joke. I mean, a guy gets, you know, James Harden's whining about a foul call when he grabbed the defender's arm, okay? Yeah. He knows what he did, and he's complaining. Travel. In the NBA, if you're complaining about a travel, you're silly because you're probably complaining because you can't believe it was called is why you're complaining. But you know the rule exists, and you know you travel. But the whole griping and bellyaching after every single call, and we talked about it not too long ago, how is it that you have to get 16 technicals in a season before you get suspended for a game? Shouldn't it be 5? That would clean it up a little bit, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
In the playoffs, it's 7. If you get 7 technicals in the playoffs, you're suspended a game. We saw that happen to Draymond Green a few years ago against the Cavs. And, you know, to this day, I think the Cavs would not have won that championship had Draymond Green played in Game 5. Yeah, it changed the whole tenor. Yeah. It changed the momentum of the series. But that's Draymond Green's fault. He put him in that situation. Kevin Durant's going along the lines of Draymond Green because Kevin Durant gets 2 tees the other night and gets thrown out of the ball game because he's playing Mr. Macho Man when the game was not in doubt, which was silly. So he makes himself bigger than the team and gets in the skirmish with Patrick Beverley, and he stands over him after he pushes him out of bounds after they got into it a little bit ahead of that. Durant now has 2 technical fouls. He's on a fast pace to get suspended for a game in the playoffs. That could come up big in a key situation. Let's say we get the NBA Finals and the Warriors are down 2-1 against the Raptors or the Bucks. And he picks up a 7 technical foul for doing something, and he forgot that he had 6. You know, just heat of the moment. He's out for the next game.
Yeah.
But why does it take 7? Why does it take 16 to get suspended in the NBA? And Jeff Van Gundy was all over it, and I loved him for saying this. He said, listen, the officials, we talk about how the player's out of control. He goes, it starts with the officials. He said, they got to stand up for themselves. That's what he said. He goes, they need to stand up for themselves. After every call, people are whining and bellyaching. You tee them up early, guess what? Do you think they want to get thrown out of the game?
No.
So what will they do?
They'll quiet down.
They'll quiet down and mind their P's and Q's. It's just like a coach. How many times do you see a coach get a tee, sometimes on purpose, but sometimes they get one early? Do you usually see a coach get thrown out and get one later in the game?
No.
Not very often, especially in a key game. Now, players, their emotions get away from them. Sometimes they go a little too far, and usually you get more leniency for your second technical after getting an early first because you're a superstar. But this has got to be cleaned up. It's a joke. They're showing shots of young kids in the stands watching this game. I'm like, what are they learning? They're learning Kevin Durant to be a jerk on the court. And I like Kevin Durant.
And you can do this 7 times before anything happens to you, kids.
And twice, and then you're out of the game. But Kevin Durant, I've always liked Kevin Durant, and I'm still not exactly happy the way he left Oklahoma City, but I understand why. He chasing championships, and I don't think him and Westbrook got along. That's fine. He had the choice to do that. Power to him. He earned that right to get to that spot in his career, to make that choice and leave Oklahoma City and go to Golden State. But he's become a different person when he's gone to Golden State, especially the last couple of years.
Yeah.
And he's acting more like Draymond Green. And I don't like Draymond Green's antics. And I used to love the Warriors and watch them play. And then Draymond Green became just more and more of a problem. And now I don't cheer for the Warriors because of Draymond Green. Seriously, I love Curry. I love Klay Thompson. But I don't cheer for the Warriors because I'm so tired of Draymond Green's act. Now, I have another reason not to cheer for the Warriors. And that's I'm starting to get tired of Kevin Durant's act. Because he was not like this before.
No.
He's becoming, I don't know if he's just an angry person now and not happy with his life. But it's just not becoming of him. And he does great things in his community, did at OKC, he's doing it at Golden State, and we don't see all that. I don't think he's a bad person at all, but something has changed with Kevin Durant a little bit, and his intestinal fortitude and the way he acts on the court. And I see these young kids in the stands, and I'm with Jeff Van Gundy. The officials, it starts with them. And if Kevin Durant wants to bellyache because he doesn't get a call because he's a star and he gets teed up and he gets offended by it, let him keep chirping some more and throw him out of the game. Now, I know fans pay good money to not watch the officials become the story and that they don't want to see stars thrown out of the game. I get that. What I'm saying is, yeah, you could have more leniency with your second technical. But that first one, they're better. Don't give leniency. You're going to start. Listen, guys get thrown out of baseball for what? Arguing balls and strikes. It's an automatic. You argue balls and strikes. There's a little bit of leniency, but not a much. You start arguing balls and strikes, you're gone. If I'm an NBA official, you start arguing with me about a call I made. And now, if I missed a call, I'm going to listen a little bit more and probably not give you a T because that's just silly to compound a mistake. But they do. The officials got to get the thing put back together. And it starts with them. But I say it starts with them not only at the pro level, but at college, we're seeing more of it. And at high school, I see it more, and you do too, where these kids are a little bit out of control at times with their emotions, and referees take more punishment, more verbal abuse, and the inflammatory actions of throwing up their arms or throwing the ball away from the official, not tossing it or handing it to the official. That was automatic tees back in my day. And I know I'm old, so I sound like a fuddy-duddy and a curmudgeon myself. But it's time for officials to understand, okay, I don't have to make it about me as an official, but you as a player need to respect my authority. And if you're not going to, I have the power to give you a T, and I will. And what are they going to do, fire you? There's a shortage of officials in high school. You're not going to get fired as an official because you give a kid a T in the first quarter because he's being silly. I like what Jeff Van Gundy said. Now, will it get any better? Will officials actually do that? Will there be emphasis by Keisha at the Kansas State level to enforce that type of stuff at the college level for the NCAA, for the NBA, and the Players Union? Well, the Players Union, of course, won't fight for it. I don't know. I would say probably not, but it's only going to get worse.
Oh, yeah. I remember when Van Gundy was talking about it, that Warriors-Spurs the last time they played, and the Warriors were in that game. They were just complaining that nothing was getting called, and they were just after every single, and Van Gundy was saying the exact same things that night. He's like, officials need to take control of this tee, because eventually they did call a tee, and he's like, they needed to do that way earlier. They needed to get on these guys and tee them up early, and then they'll stop them. And it is. It's at every level. It's become outrageous to me, some of the things that they get away with, not even just with technicals, but just general things on the floor, too, with calls that are made and not made and carrying the ball and traveling and things like that. And obviously the NBA, the rules are just outlandish anyway, but that they don't, you know, enforce as far as that's concerned. But, yeah, I mean, it is. It gets out of control. And I don't know if teams like the Warriors, when they start getting good and they start getting cocky.
Oh, yeah.
And you can see that even from Steph Curry and Klay Thompson. Oh, yeah. You know, Steph Curry's way more cocky now than he used to be. He used to just go out there and play and let his game do his talking.
That's when I really liked
now he shimmies and does all this stuff. And they're cocky because they've won three out of four, and they've won two in a row. And you know, had it not been for Draymond Green getting tossed, they might have four straight. You know,
Not have got Kevin Durant though, either.
And they might, exactly. You never know. I mean, that's all hindsight 2020 type of deal. But yeah, the Warriors are cocky, and that's what I don't like about them. I really enjoyed watching them play that first go around. It was fun to see a team finally do it the way they play the game. Because you didn't see teams like that winning championships until the Warriors did it. And now a lot of teams are trying to model themselves after that and play that way.
We were part of a traveling basketball team, and we go against – I mean, there was like four straight games we played against. The other team got a tee for a kid, and good for the official teeing them up. But these kids now, they're so flamboyant. Like, they make a three, even if they're down 14-3. They put up the three fingers, and they make it about themselves, and there's some strutting. And then there's the kids that, you know, argue with the official, even in, you know, a 11, 12 and under basketball tournament. Where do you think they learn this stuff from?
Yeah.
They watch TV. They watch the pros get away with it. They watch college players get away with it. And so the NBA and NCAA, and even high school for that matter, the officials, I'm not blaming the officials as a whole, because they got to have some support from the organizations that pay their paycheck. But those organizations, the heads, the top people at the chain, at Keisha in this instance, since we're in the state of Kansas, at the NCAA, at the head of the NBA, Adam Silver, obviously, the commissioner, somebody's got to take a lead and say, we can't accept this anymore because we got young people now doing these same things, and it's not what the sport's supposed to be about. But I don't know how many of those people actually go to a traveling basketball tournament or actually go to high school games and see what is taking place. Yeah. I don't think they have a clue because they live in their own world and they have no idea. And to hear about it, like, yeah, whatever.
We're so
can't
far
be that
beyond
bad.
That level that they don't care anymore.
But it's also the me generation because we go into what's the first thing? What's the biggest thing that gets on SportsCenter usually in regards to the top 10? It's something crazy, awesome, and sometimes very flamboyant, right?
Yeah.
And we get all fired up with some people that do different things that draw attention to themselves, and that becomes a big story in the real world too, whether it be politicians, whether it be entertainers or athletes. We do that, and we promote it even more and more, and it just gets to the point where it's like, that's not sportsmanlike at all. What happened to sportsmanship? It's just it's dying, in my opinion.
To a point, you're absolutely right.
Yeah, so anyway, Clippers-Warriors tonight, and then the Magic-Raptors tomorrow, Spurs-Nuggets tomorrow, Thunder-Blazers game two tomorrow. NHL playoffs, Golden Knights of Vegas, they win last night over the Sharks 6-3. Vegas leads 2-1. The Jets beat the Blues. Blues lead 2-1. Islanders beat the Penguins. They lead 3-0. And the Blue Jackets up 3-0 with a win over the Lightning. And the hockey games for today, the Bruins against the Maple Leafs, series tied 1-1. Game three, Capitals Hurricanes. Capitals defending NHL Stanley Cup champion. They up 2-0 over the Hurricanes. That's been the ticket. Hope you enjoyed it. Have a great day.